Oh, hey, how are you? Great to hear. Yeah, come in. Make yourself comfortable. Like a drink? Sure. There you go. Welcome to the Tech Lounge. Shall we begin? Welcome to another Tech Lounge with me, Christian Scheller. I was on holiday last week, so slight gap in the programming. This has been the story of 2026, but from now on, get a bit more stable again, actually. I have another interview from Web Summit in Lisbon last November, and this episode is with Avery, the CEO of Tailscale, which I was quite excited about. I've actually, almost all of the interviews from Web Summit were with people who worked for companies whose products I use, and Tailscale is no exception. I use it for connecting up a bunch of my remote machines. Love it. It took me a while to discover, well, it didn't take me a while to discover it, but it took me a while to actually use it. I sort of knew about it and didn't really know what it was, and then I discovered it's like, oh my God, I really should have found out about this and years ago. Anyway, it's a great interview. Again, a little bit of background noise because it's from an event. I've done my best to clean it up, but please persevere. It's a great interview. SetApp. SetApp is a subscription for Mac apps and also iOS apps where you pay one monthly fee and you get access to dozens, if not hundreds now, of really premium level applications. What am I using right now? I'm currently using Craft. I'm using Craft quite a lot for a Gamescom help organize in Berlin. We're using it to organize our knowledge management and various things. I've actually been using Downy a lot more recently. I went traveling and I had some YouTube videos I wanted to watch that you can't normally watch on a plane. Yes. Better Touch Tool. I love that. That's a perennial classic. World Clock Pro. That has been very helpful the past few weeks as well, whilst I've been traveling, and many more besides. So if you want to get your hands on all of those for one monthly subscription and throw a few cents the way of the show, head on over to go.christianscheller.com/setup.
It's funny, I live in Montreal. We just had a company offsite. Should I just like pop this on here?
Is it good?
Okay.
It's the only, actually the only Canadian city I've been to is Montreal.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and it's like kind of like New Orleans. It's like kind of bizarro New Orleans or vice versa.
Probably less.
It's the French impact, right? It's just that there's no real French left in New Orleans.
I imagine Montreal to be slightly less seedy than New Orleans has its.
Well, I mean, it has its seedy areas,
side.
But it's like the seedy parts of Montreal are just sort of like that because you're going for the vibe, not really because of the crime. If that makes sense.
New Orleans, I was like, I'll walk down this street. Ooh, I'll go back that way again.
Yeah, I had a couple of those for sure.
It was Montreal. We were just there completely by coincidence. We got there during the jazz festival.
Ah, okay.
Which was great.
Probably paid a lot for your hotel.
I don't even know how we... It was back in the day when... That's when I lived in Australia. And so you do these big round-the-world trips for a month.
Oh, yeah.
And when you used to use a travel agent, you'd just be like, book me stuff. And then they'd give you stuff. And then you just... So you didn't really get... I don't know. Actually, that was an easier world in some respects. Because you didn't really look at the individual prices. They just kind of quoted you. You were like, okay.
That's kind of nice.
Really, but it feels like
I did the riskier version of that. I did a month in Ireland, and I didn't book anything. So I got off the plane, and I was like, ta-da, I bet there's somewhere to stay around here. And there was.
Depending where you were, unfortunately, too much of a control figure for that. But
I wanted to go to the Edinburgh Film Festival, Fringe Festival at the end of my trip. And that one, I really should have booked in advance, because there was nothing available.
No, you probably have to go to Glasgow, at least.
Yeah, I ended up in... ended up in some guy's apartment that he was splitting four ways. It's like, all right, well, at least I get to go.
I actually do have friends who live around there. I don't know. They really should do that.
Yeah, I definitely know people who are jazz festival in Montreal is nuts. I'm renting out my place and taking off.
Similar. Anyway. on the subject of preparedness and security.
Oh, yeah, security.
Let's very quickly maybe start because Tailscale is a unique kind of beast in many different ways.
what would you describe Townscale as? It's a very sort of quick 30 seconds description.
Well, I have a few different versions. None of them is quite right. Some people call it a VPN, but then the usual response to that is like, blah, I don't know if I want a VPN. But actually, if you have a VPN and you need a VPN, you probably would prefer Townscale. It's also a mesh network. And it's also what I've been experimenting with, our new mission statement. It's not locked in yet. But we're thinking of calling it the new internet protocol layer that should run on every device everywhere. It's lofty.
That starts to give slight blockchain crypto vibes, unfortunately, as well.
Yeah, well, there's absolutely no blockchain. There is cryptography in the old-fashioned sense.
It would be more like BitTorrent used to be in some respects.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And Townscale is a distributed system, but it's a hybrid, centralized distributed system, so it doesn't have the same kinds of downsides as blockchain, such as being really expensive.
I used to work for the Ethereum Foundation, so you don't have to... I've been through on the whole journey of despair and... Anyway...
But everybody wants distributed systems. That's the thing, right? You think of the internet. It's like, wow, this should be a distributed system.
Yeah.
And then everything gets routed through AWS. I'm like, well, that's not as much of a distributed system as we kind of
think. This was one of the issues I hit with Ethereum. We all suddenly realized that everything was just running on AWS. So it's like, what have we done? We've just added a layer of complexity, really. That's all we've actually really
done. My favorite is there's a lot of blockchain people that use Townscale as their backend. And I met some at a party one time, and I'm like, hey, I don't know how to tell you this. Townscale's control plane is centralized.
Yeah.
Isn't it kind of weird that you run your thing on Townscale? And they're like, every other networking system is just so complicated.
So, personally, I've mostly... Well, this is where I think sometimes even I get a little bit confused with the differences and sort of what you've described. Because in my mind, I use a combination of the mesh network and the VPN. I have mostly, ostensibly, a Linux server and a Mac Mini in my office space that serve different purposes, and often I want to access them. And I used to do it through a router and opening ports. And then I got a message one day from my ISP saying, you've got all these like dangerous ports just exposed. We're not telling you you have to turn them off, but you should know about this. And I was kind of like, this doesn't really sound like a good idea. What's another option, though? And I'd heard Townscale on podcast ads and things, and again, never really completely, I think this would be useful, and I looked it up and installed it, sort of like, oh my God, this is exactly what I had been looking for, in that I can create a mesh network, but only when I enable the VPN. In theory, nobody else can access it. And I think that's often where maybe the things get a little confused, because they sort of go hand in hand, I guess, to a degree, or not always. Because when people think of a VPN, they often also think of something like Express, which is not completely like that, is it?
So the tricky part is, as a networking nerd, the literal term VPN just means something that operates at layer 3, what else operates at layer 3? Well, the internet, right? What is the reason you have to do all these contortions just to run services on your home network and then access them back home? It's because the internet has been kind of failing us, right? If you go back to the 1990s, and I was around in the 1990s, and I was like doing dial-up ISPs and stuff like that, it was a really different world where every single computer on the internet had a fixed IP address that, because they bought an IPv4 address and they did all the routing and stuff, and sometimes there was redundant routing, and you could like get from any machine to any other machine by like connecting to its address. And if you look at the internet now, it's barely the internet, right? Everybody's address changes. The address is owned by the interface you're plugged into, not the machine itself, right? All this stuff has sort of fallen apart. And now what used to be the internet is more like layer two. It's like an interface network.
Yeah.
And so what Townscale does is it just brings back a world where every device that you should have access to now has its own fixed address.
Yeah.
And we've got encryption, so we know for sure when someone's trying to contact you that that address works. And it doesn't care about firewalls and NATs and all that other stuff. We like deal with it so that you can just ignore the problem. Right? And that just allows you to have devices scattered wherever you need to scatter them and then connect them to each other with no intermediaries, because there's some magic we do in the middle.
Yeah. When did the project start? And what was the... I imagine it to be a very particular itch that someone was trying to scratch that just happened to grow quite successfully. But when did it begin?
Well, me and my co-founders, David and David, started the company in 2019. We didn't know exactly what we wanted to do, but the name Townscale came first. It was like, hey, what if you built something that was the opposite of internet scale? Like, everybody's building super hyper scalable stuff that's kind of complicated. What if you made something that like you know, for the people who aren't currently trying to work on super complicated stuff and just want to do something dumb, like launch an internal dashboard for their team. And why is that so hard, right? Because nobody's building anything for these people. And it turns out these people exist everywhere, including at hyperscaler startups or hyperscaler companies that are running systems that serve billions of people. Inside those companies are teams that need to launch an internal dashboard. And it's all the same problems everywhere. Yeah. And so we started with that kind of as the thesis. And then one of my friends, who was the CEO of a bank in Canada, ended up contacting me and said, Avery, I heard you're starting a startup. Don't know what you're doing. I have a networking problem. And the networking problem turned out to be they needed to be able to connect to their production systems that were kind of legacy and didn't support two-factor authentication. And they needed it to support two-factor authentication because otherwise their systems would be vulnerable to phishing attacks. So I'm like, okay, well, I can help you. I'm working on something else right now. What you probably need is just a VPN that ties into your identity system and does two-factor authentication. Let me find one for you, and I'll help you install it, and then I'll go on my way. And so I started looking, and like, there was no good system.
Yeah, it worked that way.
Right? So we built that. And then the true story of the next thing that happened was my co-founder like dared me, and he said, hey, Avery, you kind of know a lot about mesh networks. You worked on Wi-Fi meshes at your last job. Never really did what you wanted to do. Why don't we just make Tailscale into also a mesh network? And I'm like, well, I guess. And so we embarked on a multi-month project to like meshify this thing we had just built. And it turned out it worked.
So really only 2019 as well.
That was 2019. Wow. Yeah, it was only about 6.5 years ago.
It's funny how sometimes there's these products or projects that just feel like they've been around a lot longer.
Well, that's a bit of an element of like who you talk to. There's this group of people in the world. It's an ever-growing group of people. That are like, oh, Tailscale, it's the best thing ever. Everybody knows about Tailscale. Yeah. And then there's this other group of people, the vast majority of humankind, that has never heard of it. Yeah. But on the other hand, also the vast majority of humankind has probably never heard of IPv4, right?
Which is what I most frequently compare to. I just hang out on a lot of nerd podcasts. You sponsored them, and people talked about it, and et cetera, et cetera. That's probably why.
I remember this concept I learned at university around abstraction, of making something that is probably really complicated seem really simple. And for the most part, with the Tailscale clients, that is kind of what you get. You have a bunch of devices running it. You make sure the VPN is enabled and you can access them. And you say no firewall configuration, no port configuration. And it seems almost like too magical in some respects. No, again, on the origin story, you made it seem like it was a very simple thing to implement. But I don't know, was it? Or how hard was it really to get this all working?
So it was actually pretty hard. It was, but it's the kind of culmination of like my whole career of failing to do this thing. My very first startup, I started it with another David from my dorm room in university.
Different David? Or?
Different one. Okay, yeah. Right. he was my co-founder of my first startup in about 1999. Yeah. And we built Linux-based appliances for small businesses. And those needed VPNs, so I built this VPN. And it was kind of cute because you could have like 5 different offices all dialing up or using ISDN connections at the time. And it would like interconnect the 5 using this like mini mesh network. And there was lots of bugs and I didn't really know what I was doing, but I learned a lot by doing that process. In the intervening years, I wrote a couple more VPN type products. One of them was an open source product called Shuttle, SSH Shuttle. And it uses an SSH connection and turns that into a VPN. Yeah. So anything you can SSH into suddenly becomes a VPN. And that became very popular. But it didn't quite have it was intended to bypass your IT team's restrictions, which didn't make it very popular with IT teams for the most part. Although we have some customers of Tailscale where the IT team decided to rule out their usage of Shuttle. And then they're like, hey, that Avery guy, he made a new VPN. We should switch to that one now. And that's somehow they became customers. Then I went to work at Google Fiber. Okay. We're working on their Wi-Fi systems with the actual Wi-Fi routers that go into people's homes for this fiber network. We sold, you know, while I was there, hundreds of thousands of these things and learned a lot about Wi-Fi. And one of the things I learned about Wi-Fi, which kind of surprised me, is that about 99% of the work of making a Wi-Fi router is just trying to convince the stupid Wi-Fi chip to not crash when you make it do something, right? And if you want to make a little Wi-Fi mesh, which some of the Wi-Fi vendors are now doing, you only have like 1% of your time left to actually make the mesh stuff work. Yeah. And that was really hard. I wouldn't say we were super successful making a Wi-Fi mesh. I wouldn't even say that any of the Wi-Fi mesh vendors are super successful at it yet. They're definitely more successful than they were 10 years ago, but it's a really slow and hard slog. And so my co-founder, when he dared me, he's like, hey, I bet we could make a mesh network. The subtext was, what if we didn't have that 99% of crap to make a Wi-Fi router work, and you spent all your time working on just the mesh part? And the answer is like, wow, that is a heck of a lot easier than trying to make Wi-Fi chips work. And so it was, I've been thinking about it all for such a really long time that I could lay out, like, this is how it should all work if only I had time to do it. And at this startup, we dedicated 100% of our time and suddenly we could do it. Now, of course, the details matter. It's been 6.5 years. The joke is sort of like based on the Hacker News comment, like, hey, I could just do this in a weekend. What are you guys doing? It's like, it's true. We made the first version in a weekend. We spent the last 6.5 years debugging it.
And it's mostly open source, isn't it?
Tailscale is open source. Yeah. There's a control server that is the commercial system. But there's also a free clone of the control server, which is totally compatible with the same client. And we hired one of the main developers of that open source control server. So depending on how you draw the lines, it's open source or open core or something like that. But you can run a full Tailscale system open source.
Well, we'll come back to that in a second. The main reason I asked was because sometimes with some companies, you ask, how does this work? And they won't tell you. But with you, you probably will. So
that's me.
Is that aspect of being able to bypass port configuration, firewalls and things. I mean, even now you use a more commercial VPN in some hotels and airports and they block them working. What is making those connections across the internet so seamlessly? Like, what are you using under the hood there?
So the trick to Tailscale's reliability is we try a lot of different things simultaneously, and then we send the packets over whichever of the paths actually works.
Okay.
Right? And the most reliable path is also the slowest one.
Yeah.
It looks like an HTTP session to one of, or an HTTPS session rather, to one of the many servers we call DERP around the internet.
Right.
And it's pretty hard for anything to block HTTPS without blocking a whole bunch of things accidentally. Yeah. So mostly they don't. The problem is you don't really want to carry your network traffic over HTTPS if you can avoid it, because they're individual packets and you get all these TCP over TCP problems and so on. So you prefer to like layer faster methods on top. But when you're really, really stuck and you're in airport Wi-Fi and the airport Wi-Fi is blocking everything except what it definitely can't see, it looks like it might be, you know, your bank website traffic or something like that, Tailscale can still get through. And people like that.
Interesting. Okay. That's often something that bothers me these days when you find a lot of places with locked VPNs. It's okay, there's me wanting to be private in a public space, but there's also a lot of businesses that enforce people using them, and I mean, they can't do anything, which is, I don't know why they do it. Well, I know why they do it, but I don't know why they do it.
Yeah, there's interesting trade-offs there. It's getting harder and harder. Like, I would consider it basically a lost cause to try to stop people from sending information using the network layer, right?
Yeah.
Because it's all encrypted now, right? And, you know, if you're not using a VPN, you could send the traffic to some random website instead and go download it from that website later. And you can try to guess which websites people are going to upload stuff to, but that's a losing battle. You can limit them to only being able to use certain websites, but that's kind of also losing a battle. Like, if you're allowed to use Google Docs, then you can upload stuff to Google Docs and then download it again, right? Or like, you know, stories of like high school kids using the chat feature in Google Docs. Did you know Google Docs had a chat feature? The kids found out, right? And they use that for chatting with their friends instead of doing their homework.
I know, it's just like,
all this is impossible. The only way to prevent that kinds of stuff is control what's on the device, which corporations have the power to do. So my recommendation is like, if you don't want Tailscale on your network, don't try to block it on the network, because you're not going to block every VPN in the world. You're just blocking Tailscale, right? Block Tailscale on the laptop and control what people are allowed to install.
They usually block secure ports, because if I can't access a VPN, I also usually can't access my email in an app, which is, because they just block secure ports, which to me seems so like counterintuitive. I think they're just very old networks.
People don't think these things through all the way. Another interesting thing about Tailscale is we do make the Tailscale traffic itself, and the existence of Tailscale is pretty easy to detect.
Yeah.
The packets actually have known signatures. Okay. And if you're really looking, or if you want to look, you can configure a router to just like detect if anybody's using Tailscale on your network. It's pretty hard to block it completely because it uses HTTPS and so on, just like it's hard to block data exfiltration generally. But once you know it exists, you can find out which laptop is using it, and you can go poke the employee and say like, hey, what are you up to?
Okay.
And that's about the level of security that's truly achievable.
Okay. Let's continue a little bit on some of the engineering perspective, because one of the other things I've often found interesting with Tailscale is you have client apps that work fairly well on almost, as fairly good citizens on almost every platform. Linux packages, but also on macOS, you even have like shortcut support. Like on every platform, it seems to behave very well.
Yep.
What was kind of the engineering challenge in, I'm assuming, having some kind of core functionality, but being able to add on the user interface that people expect on their platform of choice?
Well, to be honest, it's quite annoying.
Yeah.
It is one of the things that makes Tailscale in some ways a harder code base to hack on than your typical SaaS app.
Thank you for not just using Electron or something like that. But yeah.
Well, yeah, exactly. So it's interesting because a lot of people are tempted, especially people who haven't done it before. They're tempted is like, oh, you know what's really hard? Building the same mobile app 3 or 4 times, right? And so we'll use this gigantic platform and just like make it look the same on everybody's platform. Yeah. And that sounds good at first, but it's actually surprising how little time that actually saves.
Okay.
Right? Like using the native tools to develop a native GUI on each of the platforms you support is not really that much more work.
Yeah.
Right? Most of the work in Tailscale's case is like integrating with the platform's network layer, which is a huge pain in the neck, especially with DNS. Like, do not even get me started on the terrible DNS support in different there's like, we have a blog post on our website, the Sisyphean task of DNS on Linux.
Yeah.
But like Linux supports, I think, more than 100 different ways of setting DNS servers, right? And you have to integrate with each of these different things. Luckily, it's like different combinations. So you can support like one of these multiplied by two of these multiplied by three of these, right? But it's just insane. That stuff is really hard. The user interface, I mean, Tailscale, it's a networking product. The ideal networking product has no user interface, right? And so, you know, Electron would not be the right approach solving that problem.
Yeah.
As time has gone on, people have requested more and more, more and more user interface for Tailscale, and it's growing a little bit. The latest version now on macOS now has a beta feature for an actual window that we actually pop up that lets you look at stuff instead of just being a menu bar.
So
pretty exciting.
It's even little nice things, you know, that for example, you can't run Tailscale whilst you have another VPN engaged. So the ability to have a shortcut of just toggle my VPNs on and off.
Yeah.
It's possible. It's really nice.
Well, you know what's entertaining is it's the same API layer on macOS and iOS. It's called the network extension.
Yeah.
On iOS, you can only have one. On macOS, you can actually turn on more than one, and then they stack in like weird ways.
I have
so it
several.
Depends which one comes first, basically.
I have like AdGuard, Tailscale, Nord, and possibly even like a corporate thing as well. So.
Yeah, and you can turn them on more than one at a time. Yeah. That's the magic on macOS, but like weird things kind of happen. But it sort of technically can work. But then there's other VPNs that come in a different layer. Tailscale itself on macOS can be installed like 3 different ways, depending on what the admin needs to do, and then it can fight with itself if you want.
Yeah. So let's come to the kind of the business versus open source side of things. You mentioned the control plane, but from a kind of user, like average user perspective, is almost everything open source, including all the GUIs and things like that?
Our rule of thumb is that if your operating system is open source, then the GUI is open source.
Interesting.
And that works pretty well for us, because it's pretty hard for someone to come and complain. It's like, hey, I'm a Windows user, but I believe in the true open source. I don't want to infect my platform. It's like, okay, guy. Also, it's really hard to release the source code to an iOS app that uses network extension, because you literally have to apply to Apple for special permission to be allowed to sign network extensions. Not just a regular Xcode certificate, but like a special permission one, which means like almost nobody could use it anyway. But the shared code on all the platforms is in Go, and that is fully open source. And you can, if you have the ability to write a network extension, it's pretty easy to plug that Go code into your favorite network extension. Like, that's not the interesting part. You can also, if you're just trying to run Tailscale as a library in the app that you're trying to build, you don't even need network extension support because only your app is using the Tailscale layer. And that's really easy to integrate as well.
That's actually an interesting thing I hadn't thought about, So you could actually build like peer-to-peer applications using the SDK.
And there's a growing number of apps that like kind of quietly behind the scenes are using Tailscale.
Like you said with the blockchain thing. Yeah, that's actually an interesting point.
Yeah, okay.
I think one of the things I've, as an end user, I always look at Tailscale, like, where do you make the money?
Where do we make money? I have a blog post about that. It's called How Does Our Free Plan Stay Free?
Yeah.
And the short answer is, like, Tailscale makes money from companies
of course,
who want to pay for certain very specific things. And our seed investors, Heavybit, were very clear about this when they started. It's like, Avery, here's how you do pricing.
Yeah.
Right? Consumers, free. Engineers, mostly free.
Yeah.
Right? And then on the increasing scale, they pay for control and auditability.
Yeah.
And that's basically the things that companies pay for.
Yeah.
Right? And there's just like different levels of control. And my favorite analogy is Google Docs, right? You can have Google Docs for free. You can share your Google Docs with people individually for free. If you want to actually control which docs are shared with which people outside your organization, your IT team has to pay for paid Google Docs. And they're not mad about that because everybody knows that's worth money.
Yeah.
Right? And so that value is where people are happy to pay for tail scale. And it's different from a regular VPN where like, oh, well, maybe, you know, traditional VPNs are like, okay, we got you into the network. Now you have access to everything. Like you're plugged into the network. Tail scale is more zero trust style where once you're in the network, now we check you against ACLs. So like every single connection you make has this level of security control.
Yeah.
And then added versions have flow logging and security audit logs and even more fine-grained controls like device posture and stuff like that. So people are very happy to pay for that stuff because they never had it before, and it's very important to their network security.
And is something like custom control plane points a commercial feature as well, or you know, the ability to say we don't use your control plane, we use our own hosted one or something like that?
No, if you want to use your own hosted control plane, there's an open source tool called Headscale. That's open source, so you go off and do that. But almost never do people who have these, again, control and auditability concerns want to use the open source Headscale because they don't have any guarantee that the open source Headscale will produce all the control and auditability they want. I mean, they technically have all the control in the world by editing the source code, but almost nobody wants to do that, right? And so most of the paying users of Tail, most of the people who have money that would like to pay for a network connectivity tool will steer toward our commercial product.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, kind of ironically, in the open source world who don't want to pay for anything, those are the main users of Headscale because they just want pure open source from a philosophical viewpoint.
Yeah.
Even though Tailscale, like the free version, is pretty generous and uses our normal control plane.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it wouldn't work at all to charge money for the...
Okay. Interesting. Okay. And...
what brings you to WebSocket? What are you speaking about here?
I'm doing two things on two different stages tomorrow. One of them is a conversation about AI and security.
Okay.
Another one is on the startup stage. It's like, hey, what's it like to start a startup and get to Series C and what are all the problems?
Okay.
That kind of thing. So it's education for founders. The AI security one is a pretty hot topic, obviously. And it's a really interesting hot topic because I've learned by talking to a lot of customers in the last few months. Every CISO has this as one of their unchecked checkboxes. It's like, hey, do something about AI security.
Yeah.
Because the CEO or CTO has a different checkbox. It's like, I need the whole company to use AI more. And the CISOs are like, oh, well, that's really bad.
Yeah.
But I can't say no because the CEO or CTO says I have to say yes. So this is like a ticking time bomb.
Yeah.
What do we do to make this whole thing secure? And there's no answer. I've talked to them and like, look, I need to do it. Can't do it. There's no product I can buy. And my claim is that Tailscale is the product you can buy because we are the thing that every AI company already uses, which is another blog post, kind of a coincidence, but we like won the AI network infrastructure market by just being there when some of the AI companies started.
Well, you mean the companies use it? Or
AI companies.
Okay,
In the early days, our CRO likes to say five of the top five AI companies use Tailscale, even though we don't have logo rights for all of them.
Yeah.
And hundreds of other AI companies use Tailscale.
Okay.
And it's as simple as like in the early days, there were some startup small AI companies. They started using Tailscale. They got a lot bigger. There's a lot of employee thrashing between different companies in the AI world. They all leave these big companies. They show up in the new startups. They're like, what is wrong with the network at this place? Oh. And then they buy Tailscale, and now they all use Tailscale. So we're in this like really interesting position where we carry a lot of the traffic already, right? But if you need to connect one of these LLMs to a data source that's on your network or in a SaaS product or in the cloud or somewhere else, there's no easy way to connect it. And Tailscale is that easy way. If you put Tailscale in the path, then you can do control and auditability, which is the thing all these CISOs want from their AI security.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to lecture people necessarily about that. It'll be a more general discussion about AI security on this.
Interesting, though, when you talk about like carrying the data, when I have Telescale enabled on two different devices, I'm guessing the data isn't going through you, it's just passing through the authenticated network and they find each other, or does it all come through Telescale?
So Telescale is what I call a centralized control plane and a distributed data plane.
Yeah, okay.
So the control plane is centralized, and that's on purpose because it's what companies want. Companies want control. If you want control, you've got to centralize stuff. All this with blockchain distributed things, it's actually kind of weird that everyone got so excited about it, when in fact, nobody wants their control to be decentralized because it's really hard to figure out what is going on, right? If you centralize control, that's pretty good because it's a small amount of data in one place, right? But then you don't want any bottlenecks on the actual data that you're exchanging. So you need that to be distributed. Most VPNs, again, ironically, you got it backwards. Why is it all going through a single point and back? So Telescale is a big mesh network that tries very, very hard to not forward it through us.
Yeah.
Sometimes your firewall is so messed up that you have to forward through one of our relays, but we don't see the decrypted traffic.
That saves you a lot of money in that way because you're not hosting petabytes of data passing through.
But when it comes to like actually inspecting the traffic, because it's end-to-end encrypted, we, the company Telescale, can't see what's going on. However, you installed Telescale software in your nodes, you can configure one or the other end or both to look at its own traffic on the way of being encrypted and decrypted and send information about it to somewhere else.
Yeah.
Right? So you could, if your LLM, which is running a Telescale instance, possibly in the cloud, is connecting to an MCP server you're running, You can put something on the MCP server and configure the Telescale there to like log what is being done. Because it's not like the MCP server is interested in participating in an attack, right? It's very happy to do all this auditing, but it does it on the node and then forwards it probably to a central auditing location.
Yeah.
But it does all that in a distributed way so that, and that we never see this logging.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. The ability to like expose traffic when wanting to. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. And what is next? Apart from potentially a window in the desktop applications, what are some other features on the roadmap that you think you're excited to talk about?
So I think my favorite thing about the Telescale roadmap is that it's extremely boring. We just did this fall update a couple weeks ago, and we launched I think 5 things on 5 days, right, during the week. And each one of these things, although our users got very excited about these things because they alleviated like real pain points, I described them all as like, look, we just kind of made the product better.
Yeah.
Right? Like, okay, well, now there's an extra way for traffic to get routed from point to point when your traffic's all getting blocked. That is not as bad as DERP, but not as vulnerable as straight UDP. Mm. Right? Or now there's a new thing you can do with device postures. Or now you can have one node that advertises like 10 different names on your network for 10 different services and like funnels those to different places. That's called Telescale services. And all of those things is like, I don't know, if I talked about that abstractly, it's like, wow, you're going to launch a feature to do that. People would be like, oh, I didn't know I needed that, right? But the people who are using Telescale are like, ah, it's just kind of like, there's this like little itch that I have and I wish that itch would go away because then my experience would be that much better. And we just keep launching that kind of thing. So the idea is like, and again, comparing Telescale to the internet, which is a little bit of a lofty comparison, but it's actually a pretty good metaphor. You know, the internet doesn't need to keep getting more and more features, right, in order to become popular. The internet just needs to work better and better.
Yeah,
people need
to
keep debugging the devices that implement the internet. And the less bugs it has, the better the product works.
Kind of like that as a slogan that you said at the beginning of created in a weekend and debugged over 6 years. If only more companies did that, it would be...
Continuous improvement is what they call it in the car industry.
Because I mean, you mentioned you do have some VC funding. And often it's the funding that kind of encourages this constant, like, new features, when a lot of the time you just want the company to just fix the old features. But that doesn't really support the kind of growth model. So is that, you just been very lucky with your backers, or you were strict to them, or
we are certainly very lucky. We have raised funding at excellent times in the life cycle of Telescale, and we made a point, and I certainly was honest with every investor who invested in Telescale. It's like, look, we're not planning to launch 5 more product lines. We're not planning to spend this money as fast as we can. We are planning to spend this money in a reasonable Canadian style way. To continue improving the product that exists and get it into more people's hands because people already love it. Yeah, my investors, the board has started calling me Big C Canadian, small C capitalist, and I think that's probably pretty accurate. But yeah, it's the market of let's make the network work correctly is absolutely gigantic.
Yeah, yeah,
right. Like we're only like everybody uses tiny, tiny scratching the surface.
Yeah.
And you really, it's surprising when you go all the way down to layer three, it works. It carries everything, right? You don't need a special integration for every kind of app.
Yeah.
Like all the different things that mean you have to like have this infinite software development load on your head to grow isn't there. You just need to like make a product that actually just works super reliably and then make sure people know about it and then make sure people can roll it out. And so we spend a lot of time on solutions engineering. We get compliments for our sales and solutions engineering support teams. As just being like, oh, well, this is much better to work with you guys than with the other vendor. And the way we do that, even though we have free support for even the free users of Tailscale, if you email our support team, you will get an answer.
Really?
Right? Which is a really tough promise
to
make.
I know.
But we do it because we've refined the quality of this thing to the point where most people do not need to email our support team. Right? And that has to be like 10 times better
than
the next thing.
That was very un-Canadian brag, I don't know.
It's Canadian to say true things, right? And that's how you know it's not bragging.
That's a nice point to stop, maybe. Cool, awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
Oh, there we go.
You're not on the, because I was interviewing 1Password earlier. Is it the same?
So that was it. That was our guest today. Thank you very much for joining me in the Tech Lounge. I have been Christian Schiller. If you want to know more about Tech Lounge, head on over to christianschiller.com or please tell your friends about us. It's quiet and cozy in here, but the more listeners, the merrier. You can find more at christianschiller.com/podcast or in the show notes or episode notes, wherever you found this podcast. Thank you very much for joining me and you're most welcome next time.